Good morning and welcome to this episode of Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. Thank you for listening. On this show, we introduce listeners to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light, and those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light.
Good morning again and welcome. It is my pleasure this morning to feature two guests for this episode, a husband and wife team. Don and Betty Best are a writer and photography team who have worked together in the Amazon in journalism and missionary work for several years. Don is the author of several books, including the River Wild series, which consists of two books so far, The Gravedigger's Dream and the third, Promise. Good morning, Don and Betty. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Hey, good morning, Patty. How are you?
Good morning, Patty.
Well, I'm very excited to have the two of you. Don, I only got to read the first half of your series, so now I've got to get into that second book. But before we talk about that, let's go back to the beginning. Don, what influenced your interest in joining the Peace Corps?
Well, you kind of have to look back at the times. It was I joined the Peace Corps in 1972, and right out of college, I had a degree in journalism. And it was a time, I have a Christian background, so there was that kind of at work, the idea of sharing with people and spreading hope and blessings. And the other was it was kind of an altruistic time in our country, the 60s. I grew up in the 60s and went to college in the 70s, and there was kind of this, the best part of, I guess you'd call the love generation or the things that happened in the 60s, was that idea that you could change the world for the better, kind of an altruism. It was secular, but it was altruism nonetheless, and Peace Corps was, you know, John Kennedy's baby. So right out of college, I decided, rather than take a straight career path into journalism, to go see the world, and that's why they might have sent me anywhere. You know, they might have said Hungary or Czechoslovakia or someplace in Africa. As it happened, they assigned me to Paraguay, which actually was a course change for my whole life, because that took me first to Puerto Rico language training and then on to Paraguay, which is a little kind of unknown country right in the middle of South America.
I wondered if Latin America was, I don't know how the Peace Corps works, so I didn't know if you had an opportunity to select a certain area that you wanted to go or if you were assigned. So I'm glad you clarified that, because I just didn't know.
Yeah, they will say, we have a team going to Paraguay. In my case, it was about 20 people in the team. Are you interested in that? And you can say no, I'll wait for another team, but I actually took the first one offered.
Betty, where and how did you meet Don?
Well, I kind of came from a kind of very different sort of background and a very different worldview. I was a loud atheist. I prided myself on debating Christians into a corner. But God had plans. The God that I didn't know sent me on a lot of sort of course corrections without my even knowing that it was him. I had a Brazilian exchange student and fell in love with Brazil and the Portuguese language, and came down to Brazil the same time that Don came to Brazil from Paraguay. And I had intended to be taking a boat up to the Amazon from Rio de Janeiro, but the boat broke down and I was stuck in Rio and had picked up in my few days there that there was an English language daily newspaper in Rio. So that's where I headed. And I met this gorgeous blonde finance editor there and stared at him until he finally invited me out to lunch.
Oh, how sweet.
So yeah, we met in Brazil and in Rio. Yeah.
Betty, I love to hear stories like yours of people who did not have faith and came to faith. To me, they are the most fascinating stories, and the way that God weaves our path for us and leads us along, even though we sometimes don't want to go, we go kicking and screaming. And I just love to hear stories like yours. So thank you so much for sharing that. And it's interesting that the two of you came from such different backgrounds, and here you've been together in a successful and happy marriage for, what, 40 years now, is it?
It's 40, coming up, 45, let's say, for the moment, and over 40, let's put it that way.
Four decades. Oh, my goodness. That is just so wonderful to hear. Thanks for sharing that story.
God is able, and there are many, many God incidences in between there that I could write a book about how he got hold of us and me.
In my opinion, Betty, you need to write that book.
Okay. Challenge accepted.
She's actually a good writer in her own stead. You know, she's a very good writer. She is also my first reader when I write things. These two novels are my fifth and sixth books, and she's always my first reader, so, yeah.
Of course.
And his chief cheerleader.
Of course, biggest fan, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. He's a great writer. I just can't wait until he finishes something. I don't get to read it until he's done, so that I can read it like with a fresh view, so that I don't know things I shouldn't know, et cetera.
You know, and that's probably a good thing that he does it that way. We'll get into the book here in a minute, but I thoroughly enjoyed that first book, and of course now you whetted my appetite for the second one. But before we get into that, give us a brief overview, the two of you, of what kind of work did you do in Latin America? What kind of mission work did you do? And what did you find there? And what did you expect to find there compared to what you found? And just tell us about that experience.
Well, there's kind of a big chapter one in Brazil, and that was in Rio, that he wasn't saved and hadn't come to faith yet. And so we worked in a very cosmopolitan place. Rio is a city of 6 or 7 million. And the secular jobs with the newspaper. And so that was kind of Brazil part one. It lasted maybe 2 years or 2.5 years. And we came back to the States and were married and had children. And after a long season in New Hampshire, that's where we had our family, we joined the mission. The name of the mission is Project Amazon, or PAZ, P-A-Z, which means peace in Portuguese. It's a non-denominational mission. So we joined the mission with a couple of different skills. Our first offering to the mission was logistical support. We hosted the guest house in Santarém, Brazil, which is right in the middle of the Amazon, Santarém do Pará. And our second contribution was our writing and graphic skills. We helped. The mission didn't even have really a workable website at that point and was struggling really to get appeal letters out. And so we helped on that front too. Well, we were there for 10 years in the Amazon, and so it's a lot to kind of capsulize, but the overarching mission, job of the mission was to take the gospel to unreached villages and towns in the Amazon. It's an enormous challenge. The Amazon, if you look at a map, covers the whole northern part of Brazil and laps over into Peru and Venezuela and other countries. It's about the size of the eastern United States, so if our listeners could kind of imagine everything east of the Mississippi, that's how big the Amazon is. There are no roads. All the travel and the commerce is on rivers. And in that huge wild area, it's one of the wildest places on Earth. It probably is the wildest, most unexplored place on Earth. There are hundreds, actually thousands of towns and villages. Some of them are quite remote and never, some of the places we went, people had never seen an automobile, or had only seen it, maybe they had a generator and a little television. They'd seen automobiles on television. So the mission, using boats, we had a big fleet of metal hull boats, maybe 60 boats altogether of different sizes. The mission was to go out on the rivers, and we also had a light aircraft, amphibian aircraft, and share the gospel on what the Bible would say were the uttermost parts of the world, right? I don't know. We were out on the edge of the world, literally. So that's what we did. And we took teams out, Patty. Volunteer teams would come down from the United States and Canada, normally church teams, mission teams. Also from the south of Brazil, from the richer, more cosmopolitan areas of Rio and São Paulo. And even an occasional team from, we had a team from Europe, a couple teams from Europe, I guess, over that span. And we were the liaison people who went out with the teams, basically, to do those evangelical missions. The One more quick thought. Well, you want to add something, Betty, about what went on in the village or village?
Yeah. We got to see a lot of villages. There were about 120 teams that came to visit during that 10-year period, and we went out with about 2/3 of them. And so we were really blessed to see a part of the world and a kind of a culture that few ever see. And the work was, what we'd do would be to support the work of local believers or a local believer who was trying to bring the gospel, maybe from a neighboring village. We would come in with medical boats, dental boats, healthcare boats initially, and then once the group of believers had grown to 3 small groups or so, then we would offer to come in with a team and help them to build a physical church building. We would also bring in water filters because the people were constantly getting sick from biologically contaminated water, not chemically contaminated. The exciting part was many times people, you can imagine if you were in a community of, say, 60 people in the middle of nowhere, and you haven't seen or heard of a doctor, a dentist, you're drinking polluted water, you may or may not have access to a school for your kids, you feel pretty forgotten. So it was very exciting to be able to come up in a big steel-hulled boat with a team of 30 or so on board and just offer medical and dental felt needs to people who were desperately in need of it. People would walk 7 hours to come to get their teeth pulled because they had abscesses. So it was very exciting to just by pulling up to this village to say, God has not forgotten you. Here we are.
It sounds like extremely fascinating and quite challenging, but such rewarding work. Oh, my goodness. I listened to a couple like you, and I think, wow, what a blessing to be able to serve in that manner and what bravery and stamina it takes to do that. So I want to champion both of you and tell you that God certainly has used you as a servant, and it's just amazing to listen to your stories. I would like to know, what was the main belief in that area? It wasn't Christianity. Was it paganism, or what kind of religion, if any, did people practice?
So let's start out with, so the it's a mix for sure. The indigenous people, we didn't work a lot with the indigenous people. Most of the people in the Amazon are Brazilians. They identify with Brazil. Only really a small portion are indigenous, and they would have animist kind of earth religions, I guess you'd say, that came there of the jungle. Animist, I think, would be maybe a good word. So the Jesuits, so the Portuguese founded, the Portuguese were the first European power to come there, and they brought Jesuits and other Catholic missionaries. So it is, Brazil actually today is the largest Catholic nation in the world. First exposure to Christianity would have been through the Catholic Church that came with the explorers.
Sure.
And so on top of that, then you had multiple waves of immigration, including a lot of slavery. The Portuguese were the world's great slave traders, along with the Spanish. And so they brought thousands, you know, millions of African slaves to Brazil. And they brought with them Macumba and Candomblé, which are of the same root of voodoo. They're African religion. So that is a mix in there as well. And so you get this goulash of, and more recently, like let's say in the last 40 years, 50 years, evangelical Christianity, or Protestant, let's just say Protestant churches have been very active in South America generally, and in Brazil. And today, I would say the most powerful and fastest growing, Betty, you can chime in here too, especially if I'm maybe not getting something quite right. Certainly, I think the evangelical churches or the Protestant churches are growing like wildfire. There's some, as you note in my book there, Patty, approach this subject, there is friction. Some of the friction in the village is actually friction between the Catholic Church and Protestant Church, and that still exists
yes.
today. So that's where we are.
I do want to emphasize that the Catholic Church there is quite different from the Catholic Church we know here in the States. It's a lot more, as Don was indicating, it's a lot more syncretistic, mixed in with spiritism and voodoo and so forth. The saints have sort of alter egos that are, we would say, demonic. They cast spells and so forth by appeasing these, quote, saints and spirits that have been just sort of, are just barely beneath the surface, okay, and have practices that are just plain witchcraft.
I think one of the things that the books, The Grave Digger's Dream and The Third Promise capture well is that dynamic in the village that you have a deep, like back to the 1600s, a deep Catholic presence. You have and you have witchcraft in the village. These books are fiction, but they are really rooted as closely as I could possibly draw the pictures and describe the characters rooted in reality. So there is Witch Alzira, one of the characters. She's a really bad actor. She practices Macumba. And it's not a white witch. It's a very dark kind of witchery. Mm-hmm. And that's a very real presence there. Casting spells and buying potions. And Americans may not put much credence in that, but boy, certainly Brazilians do. And we've seen some things that sometimes show up in the book that will chill your blood. So,
goodness.
Yeah, so it's a real mix, and God is not giving up on those little villagers, I'll tell you that.
No.
Sometimes, Patty, we've been in the little humble churches that had dirt floors and thatched roofs, and where the presence of the Holy Spirit was so strong that you would walk in, no instruments, no electricity, just people singing a cappella.
And clapping.
And maybe clapping, or maybe they have some kind of simple drum. We've walked into church services like that where the presence of the Holy Spirit was so strong, you would begin to weep. I mean, before you even got sort of through the door, you could feel the presence of the Holy Spirit. So God hasn't given up on these places, and that's for sure. And in fact, He loves those places because the people there are simple and generally and materially poor. Many times very open to the gospel, not always, but many times they're open to hearing, particularly the children and the women. I would say maybe the men are a little more stubborn.
I'm sure.
And you get to see, it's so exciting, the local workers, the local evangelists that we were supporting, I swear, it was like working with Peter and Paul. And there we are in the midst of fishing country with everybody's a fisherman. It's just so biblical. It's kind of gives you goosebumps.
What a blessing for you too. And you know, I think when we spoke on the phone, I talked about how I bring guests onto the show who have either been in a dark place and found their way back to light, or those who, like you, go into a place of darkness and are that beacon of light. And what a blessing it is for the two of you to have had those kind of experiences. You could write multiple books on all that you have experienced there. And that's another blessing. You are actually taking the time to write and let the world know what you've seen there, even though you're doing it through fiction, Don. We'll take a break here where I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with host Patty Sheen here on Blog Talk Radio. Today we are featuring two guests. Don and Betty Best are a husband and wife writer and photography team who spent several years in the Amazon. Don is the author of the River Wild series. The first book is The Gravedigger's Dream, and the second half of that series is The Third Promise. If you would like to listen to this episode again, or hopefully refer it to friends and family, it is available on Archive. The most current 5 episodes can be found on the homepage at pattysheen.com. That is spelled PATTISHENE.com. The Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page will give you access to all the episodes we have aired to date. Under each episode is a More Information tab that provides links to guest website, social media, and other resource information. Let's return to our interview. Tell us about your River Wild series, and how did you move from journalism to novel writing also?
So I've loved writing ever since I was really young, high school, and though my career, my secular career, I guess you'd call it, has been in magazines and newspapers, done a lot of magazine writing and newspaper work, and I've always also written some fiction, short stories, even very early on, and I began to take notes and write in the Peace Corps, actually some sketches for novels and fictional stories. And when we lived in Brazil, when we were young, very young, already I was working typewriters in those days. No word processors yet. Just with notebooks and pen and paper and typewriter. So some of the roots of my the fictional works, I've written three novels. These last two about Brazil have been evolutionary. In other words, the genesis of them goes way back. But let me just say about the Amazon and the people. So these books were inspired by the Brazilians and by the beauty. This is not autobiographical, by the way. It's not my story or Betty's story. It's, as you know, because it's told through the eyes of a Brazilian. And neither is it a story of the mission. It's a story of inspired by the Brazilians and by the rainforest. You cannot go there and see the things that we saw and not be just, and I'm kind of a compulsive note taker anyway, but on the boat trips out onto the rivers, which those boat trips sometimes went, you know, the hours and hours and hours of boat trip.
Mm-hmm.
So in my hammock, we slept in hammocks, I'd be taking notes about the beauty of the rivers and the rainforest and about people we met. So the characters evolved right out of those experiences. There's a lot to love, a whole lot to love about Brazilians. They're just beautiful. They were so welcoming to us and gracious and generous. What other adjectives would you add, Betty? Musical and
ingenious. What they could do with an empty soda bottle.
Yeah, ingenious and joyful, often joyful despite their poverty. Like they would have Americans scratching their heads saying, where is this joy coming from? They don't even, you know, these places don't have electricity, they have latrines and just simple life and hand-to-mouth, existence. And so they're, so having said that, about they also have every problem and every dark characteristic known that we have here. They're no different. So the rainforest is very different than South Carolina here where I live, and you know, this is a different culture, but all of the weaknesses, character, as you know, having read The Grave Digger's Dream, the main character is very flawed. In addition to being very poor, scratches out a living by fishing and being the village grave digger. He has a serious problem with alcohol, and he does not.
Yes.
He abuses his wife, and so he has these very serious character flaws. And I guess the message would be. The other characters, of course, in the village are inspired by real people to some large extent, you know, especially his son, who's in the book. I came to really love them, and they came to surprise me as I wrote the book. I guess, Patty, the overarching theme would be in a poor place like that, it's forgotten. They say escondido. In Portuguese, they say esquecido y escondido, I bet you.
Mm-hmm.
That, right? Hidden and forgotten. They're very poor. And a man with serious problems, villagers with serious problems, struggling to make a living. And God has not given up on them, and the same way has not given up on me or any of us. That God would find them and give this man a dream. Hence the name, the Gravedigger's Dream. God would find him in his place and give him a dream. Yeah.
And actually bring the gospel to him.
And actually bring the gospel would come to that dark place.
Yes.
Through Mick. I hope I answered your question. And in short, the inspiration came from the people and the land, which is exquisite. It's a beautiful, extraordinary garden, Patty. It's just amazing. Yeah.
You did answer the question, Don, and I want to share with listeners that having read The Gravedigger's Dream, I thought your characterization was excellent, and the interplay of the characters and the culture there just came through so strong. So to listeners, I would recommend the Rivers Wild series. And I haven't read the second book yet, but believe me, it's on my list, because it's more or less a two-part series. You end the one book and it's like, okay, I got to find out what happens here.
Right.
So they're not really, I mean, they can be read independently, but you really need to read the two of them to get the full story.
That's correct. Yeah, it's a two-part novel.
Right. I will be reading The Third Promise is the name of that second book just as soon as I can get to it. Let me tell you, you did a great job, Don, and I'm sure, Betty, that you contributed, and it was a really good book, very well worth the time to read. There's very few people that can spend time in a setting such as the Amazon without at least one adventure to share. And I'm sure you have at least one. So tell us a story.
All right. We talked about this over breakfast, thinking about this a little bit. We have actually dozens of stories. Let me tell this one. So when we took teams out onto the rivers, into the villages, the golden rule was you don't stray off. You don't go away from the missionaries and the village people. We're working together. You don't go. What you don't ever do is go into the rainforest alone. Don't go into the jungle alone. So after I'd been doing this for 7 or 8 years, I got cocky, I guess you'd say, or forgetful, and I myself actually broke the golden rule. And one morning I walked away from the village where we were working and took a path. It's like walking through a botanical garden, just beautiful butterflies and birds. And I was just walking, just, you know, kind of a quiet time, you might say, in solitude. Mm-hmm. And I felt confident, you know, I'd been doing this for 6 or 7 years, and there are monkeys overhead, and I walked, and I walked probably an hour or two, let's say, down the trail. Well, coming back somewhere along the line, I took a branch off that trail, and without realizing it, I got lost. And I'm trying to let the readers know what this is like. This is not a world where you have maps or cell phones. There are no cell phone towers, no cell phones. And this is a rainforest, and it's wild. Paths are, some are old, some are new, and some are overgrown. Some of them are just animal paths. I had been walking probably for 3 hours before I stopped in the trail. And I don't know if you've ever been lost, Patty, really lost. I mean, this is not lost at the fairgrounds, you know.
Yeah.
This is lost with a capital L. And I stopped and I said, you can't see the sun either because the canopy on the rainforest. So I had no sense of direction, and I thought, I am lost. And there's a kind of growing horror, this terror that comes over you, and you begin to cold sweat. And so maybe I'll let Betty tell you how it took me a long time to realize I was lost. Go ahead. Back at the village.
Yeah, back at the village, there's, you know, construction going on. There are people on and off the boat. There's all sorts of activity going on, and I'm sort of helping to supervise what's going on and coordinate. And I realized it probably was like 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, we start early, and it was 10 o'clock in the morning, and I realized I hadn't seen Don since breakfast. So I looked around, called around the construction site everywhere. I couldn't find him on the boat. He wasn't on the boat. And then I looked back in his stuff, and his water bottle was still there.
Oh, gee.
And that's when I started to panic. And I looked around, looked again, asked people. And then when I realized that he was really gone and it shouldn't, and without his water bottle, I mean, he could dehydrate at the very least. And there were jaguars and stuff and in that area. And I just started praying and started crying. When the foreman of the project that we, Joaquin, would come with us and oversee everything in construction, he saw that I was crying. He said, "What's going on?" And I said, "I haven't seen Don for a long time." And he said, "Well, that's it." And then he just, everything stopped. All the construction stopped. Everybody went out. Everybody stopped and went down trails. Everywhere, Joaquin hopped into the speedboat that we usually bring with us in case something happens to the large boat. We tow a speedboat behind us. Mm-hmm. And he just zoomed out and went to check with people along the various inlets of the river and told them, look, there's this gringo, there's an American that is lost. If you find him, hang on to him and let me know.
Yeah, yeah. So what happened is it started getting dark. It was into the afternoon.
Oh, so you were gone that long. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Turned into long several time. Hours. And so I realized it's getting dark. I did not think I didn't bring any water or food with me because, or even any insect repellent because I didn't, I was only out for a walk, you know, and so I began, I was pretty afraid. I was pretty afraid by that point because it's hard for us to picture this, but there are jaguars and there are anacondas and there are other things in the jungle that will kill you if you don't die from exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And and also there's no clean water. The jungle is not like Disney portrays it with fruit dripping everywhere. These are tough places. Anyway, I'm not going to make this a really long story. I just wanted, so Joaquin found me, my great friend. He was my great friend before that. And now he's my, you know, Joaquin found me basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to finish up by saying there's a real biblical parallel here. First of all, I was lost, really lost, and I didn't realize it. And when for example, when Betty was an atheist and other people are just lost, they're just lost. And they don't realize that they're lost. And so it dawned on me, I'm lost, and I need help. And so there are people back at the boat praying, which is a real interesting kind of biblical parallel. And then there's this guy named Joaquin. And, you know, he's just a good guy. But I'm going to cast him for a moment in the role of Jesus that came looking for me. His Holy Spirit, God will come looking for you. So this real biblical I was found, wasn't I? I might not have been found and might have had a very different ending to the story. There were people back at the boat who were praying and doing what they could, and Joaquin was aggressively out looking for me. I believe that's what God the Father is. He's aggressively looking for us. You know, he wants that none should be lost, but that all should come to a saving knowledge of Christ Jesus. And so that's our story. That's the one we picked out to tell.
I love that parallel, Don and Betty, because it is so true that we do often wander around totally lost, and he constantly seeks us. So, yeah, I'm sure you've written that down somewhere and probably published it someplace. Or if you haven't, you need to.
Yeah, I probably would. I should probably write that down. It's, of course, written on my heart, but I haven't written that story per se.
Yeah, that's just an amazing story that you survived that, Don. And for you, Betty, to be on the other side, wondering where in the world he was and was he ever going to be found and was he still going to be alive when he was found. So, oh, my
exactly.
goodness, that is such a powerful story. And thank you both for sharing that. And the last thing I would like to ask you before we close out the show this morning is where can we find your books?
Okay, great. Well, I hope listeners will read the books. I think they'll really enjoy them. My website would be a great place. It's my name, Don Best, B-E-S-T, author.
DonBestAuthor.com.
DonBestAuthor.com.
Yeah.
And those two books plus another book about the Amazon are on there. And plus other material. I write a blog every Friday that's on there. The book's also available on Amazon. Both the books are available on Amazon.com. Gotten a lot of 5-star reviews, so we're pretty happy about that. And you can
Great.
Google it under the Gravedigger's Dream or The Third Promise. And I would like people to come to my website, though, because I've just got to brag on Betty here, the graphic design. You know, she's the photographer and graphic design genius here. And so that's her website, really. I contributed text and some, but DonBestAuthor.com is really her baby, and she did a really great job, I think.
You know, your readers can also go to, when you go to that website, click on the Watch the Trailer
button.
Oh,
the trailer, yeah.
You'll love
okay.
it.
We put the trailer, yeah, is on the website there, and the video and the photography is all ours, mostly Betty's. And so, yeah.
And a lot of the genius is a friend named B.G. Hodges helped us put that together.
Yeah, he did help us put the trailer together.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Well, Betty, it sounds like you support the two of you support the adage that behind every good man is really a good woman.
Well, let's just turn that over and say behind every good woman is behind every great woman is a good man.
Oh.
And she's got a whole story, beautiful stories of her accomplishments that we haven't touched much on. She's just a tremendous translator and interpreter, Portuguese and English. She's very fluent, and she does that as work, as a professional work. So, yeah, other things
as
well.
Goodness. Yeah, I'm sure we could probably talk for another hour and a half about all of the many, many talents and gifts that you both have, because I've read up a little bit on the two of you, and God has really used you to serve. What a blessing that
is
to so many people.
If you give it up to God, it's amazing what he'll do with your life.
Yes.
That's been kind of the revelation of my life is, wow. I'm
Absolutely.
Very thankful for the blessings he's showered on us with just a little yes.
For sure.
The little boy didn't have much, the loaves and the fish. Like, I can't remember, was it two loaves and five fish? Or brought what he had.
Yeah,
that's kind of our story. You bring what you have and try to get your direction straight and try to listen to instructions. He can do a lot with a little.
Exactly. Well, thank you both so much for coming on the show today. You've shared so much, and you're such an inspiration. And may God continue to bless you in your writing and your photography endeavors and all of the things that you do. So thank you again.
Thank you, Patty. It was really delightful to talk with you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Thank you so much for listening today. If you would like to listen to this show again, it is on archive. Go to my website, which is pattysheen.com. That's spelled pattisheene.com. The most current 5 episodes are found right on the home page. You'll find the Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page. Click on that. It will give you a link to all the shows we have aired to date. Under each show is a more information tab. Click on that, and you will find more information about our guests, such as website and social media contacts. I can also be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Pinterest as Patty Sheen. Until next time, God bless you.